Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Time to talk some football with the professor, John Clayton, as we do every day at this time. If you guys have questions for John, you can text those in right now to 710-710. Then we'll get to some of your questions before we let him go for the day. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
Hello, guys.
Oh, there he is.
Okay.
All right. Now
take
we got
two.
You.
Take two.
Hi, John.
Hi, guys.
Hey, we didn't see you out here brisking in the sun as you were yesterday.
Yeah, no, what ended up happening is that I was waiting for an interview for a Washington Post story. And so what happened was that, it was supposed to happen Sunday. Then it was supposed to happen 1 p.m. yesterday. It was supposed to happen 1 p.m. today. And then they said, hey, can we do this at 2 o'clock? And so it's like, well, if I'm ever going to get this interview done, because I need to get something in for the Post, so I just better wait it out. So at 2 o'clock and, talking for 20 minutes, it just killed my chance to come over to practice at 89 degrees.
Yeah, you're really missing out right now.
And there's no practice tomorrow, correct?
I don't believe there is. We're not here tomorrow,
right.
So I know that.
Yeah.
Just an update for Mariner fans. Mariners are just sending, they've made a trade, JT Chargois going to the Tampa Bay Rays, along with minor league third baseman Austin Shenton in exchange for Diego Castillo, a reliever in the bullpen who's pretty good. Pretty good. You look at his numbers. I'm not sure what his contract status is. We'll get all the details. But that is a move being made by the Mariners, John.
Okay.
You were anxiously awaiting that.
Well, I'm still, just fumbling around on the one that happened a couple days ago when you trade an 082 closer to the best team in a division that you're competing against.
Yeah.
And getting, of course, I mean, the one thing is, I mean, the 214 shortstop, Toro, comes in and has four straight home runs in four straight days.
Let's hope he can keep it going.
Maybe
it's redemption for Jerry in that clubhouse. Again, it's one thing for us and the fans to feel a certain way. It's if you're messing with the chemistry in the clubhouse, that's your concern. They can live with us going, yeah, that's great or that stinks. It's about how those guys in that clubhouse feel.
Yeah, and I still think, I mean, there was so much bitterness the other day. I just wonder how much it's going to carry over. I mean, let's put it this way. This reliever, should, if he's not a closer, it's not going to go over well. If he has higher than an 0.82 earned run average, it's not going to go well.
Well, he does. Most people do have an ERA.
Oh, yeah.
That so I think he's just in the mid-2s, somewhere around there.
Okay.
And I think he's got like 14 saves. So.
Oh, that's encouraging.
Yeah. So there you go.
Well, John, you mentioned chemistry. Talk about chemistry. I don't know, and I know this happened yesterday, but Aaron Rodgers, with the list of players that have been disrespected by the Packers,
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if I've ever heard a quarterback or a player in any sport go after a team like that and management. Have you?
Yeah,
it
was
no.
Cut.
Hey,
let's play it for John. Cut number nine and get your reaction to this, John, if you've got it there, Mike.
Just the fact that we didn't retain a number of players that I felt like were core players to our foundation, our locker room, high character guys. I'm talking about Charles Woodson, Jordy Nelson, Julius Peppers, Clay Matthews, Randall Cobb, James Jones, John Kuhn, Brett Goode, TJ Lang, Brian Belaga, Casey Hayward, Micah Hyde, guys who were, exceptional players for us, but great locker room guys, high character guys. Many of them who weren't offered a contract at all, or were extremely lowballed, or were, maybe in my opinion, not given the respect on the way out that guys of their status and stature and high character deserved.
That's quite a list he just ripped off the top of his head.
But here's the interesting part about that. Most of those guys were not with the current administration. And so it's not like he's ripping the current general manager, which, of course, he has and will. It's but what he's ripping, I think, is more Mark Murphy, the team president, because, I mean, he was present for most of the departures. And so it's like, he switched gears a little bit because, I mean, Charles Woodson, that was a long time ago. And, James Jones was a long time ago. I mean, you can see that, he is upset. I'm surprised he doesn't mention Brian Belaga and, Corey Linsley. Because, again, those were guys that were good players on the recent teams that he's been on, but he didn't mention those. I mean, he's mentioned guys from the past. It's almost like you're going back in history here and saying that this franchise has done this for the longest period of time, and maybe they – obviously they have, because they've robbed him of at least the players that he likes.
Well, and then you're kind of going after the team. And we always talk about the fans will always stick with – the team,
yeah.
Right? Because
yeah.
Players come and go. So, yeah, I wonder if that's going to go over well with their fan base there, or they just love Aaron Rodgers so much that it just doesn't matter.
Well, I mean, I think they like winning, but, of course, if all of a sudden all the turmoil that he's created and is there pulls this team down, then there's not going to be, a good fan base. I know that Kevin Sieper from ESPN.com has been over there the last couple of days, and he kind of got – some of the feeling that was got there back in May when I think that the Bleacher Report went there and they went to bars and things like that and found so many people that now hated Aaron Rodgers, didn't like Aaron Rodgers. And so it's a mix. And, of course, even Mark Murphy said is like, Aaron Rodgers has divided this town.
Wow. Well, it's it's going to be very interesting to see. He was about as open as you could possibly mm-hmm. expect any player to be. I mean, we hear players who we know are disgruntled may have mentioned things in certain interviews, and then when they're asked about it in front of an assembled media, they'll speak in general terms and they'll give you real general answers. I mean, talk about being specific. And again, I lean on him saying, "Listen, I'm not a victim here. I've made a ton of money from this organization." I kind of, whether you love him or hate him, you got to respect that part of the conversation.
Yeah, but also what's interesting is that, here it is. I mean, when he was interviewed by Kenny Mayne on Kenny Mayne's last day at ESPN.
He didn't say anything.
He didn't say anything. It was real political. And, even in some of the, the 85 golf events he's been to, I mean, he was pretty benign in what he was able to say. Now he goes on the podium in Lambeau Field and just absolutely torches everybody.
Hey, John, so we heard yesterday, I think I heard from somebody that like 90 out of 91 Seahawks were vaccinated. And then, so, I mean, they're at the threshold is what,
yeah.
85%?
85. Well, right now, the threshold is 85%, and the percentage is like about 87.3 league-wide. With about 19 teams that have reached the threshold.
Okay, so that means that basically you're just getting more favorable as far as if anybody gets tested positive, you're not going to have to go into quarantine and things like that.
No, they're in good shape there. And, of course, you would have to imagine that whether it's going to be K.J. Wright or Dwayne Brown, that whether it's the guys on offense or defense, that that one player is going to get a test.
Well, it won't be K.J. He's not here, John.
What's that? Oh, no, it's not. I'm sorry, not K.J. Wright, but of course, Bobby Wagner. No, because I was thinking about, because I was just reading some of the stuff that Bobby was saying about K.J. Wright, so Wright came into my mind.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead, Jay.
Oh, you were probably going to say the same thing. It was interesting. We saw Bobby and John Schneider talking mm-hmm. out there, and we were like, I wonder what they're talking about. And so a lot of the texters said maybe they're talking about K.J. Wright.
Yeah,
maybe Bobby is just seeing if his buddy can, is there a way to get him back here? Or I wouldn't be surprised. It seemed, obviously it was a amicable conversation. Nobody was screaming or yelling or waving, kind of like Scott Service, with the first base.
It wasn't like Kelvin Benjamin yesterday with the New York Giants, right?
That's what I was just going to ask you about.
Yeah, because I mean, what ended up happening is that Kelvin, Dave Gettleman was a general manager down in Carolina and had Benjamin as a wide receiver. And so he signed him because he wanted to have him play some tight end. And so what ended up happening, he shows up at camp and he showed up at mini camp and he was 253. So then he adds about 13 pounds. And all of a sudden, once the weights came in, both Gettleman and Joe Judge, the coach, went over to him and basically started saying, "Hey, how come you got so fat?" And so next thing you know, they got into this big argument, and so they took him off the field and sent him on the road.
Yeah, he said, Judge, here's the quote from Benjamin. He says, "First thing Judge said is I came in 15 pounds overweight, so I'm like, how did I come in 15 pounds overweight when I was 265 for minicamp? And he said, you left at 265, and I came back at 268. Of course, I lift weights. I got more muscle, but I'm basically smaller than I was as a wide receiver. I was like, how is this possible? I'm a tight end now. How does that make sense? And he was saying, basically, he felt like they were trying to sabotage this whole thing.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like it. I mean, again, it was a minimum salary deal, so it wasn't like, you know, he lost a lot of money or the team lost money on him because they basically didn't give him a signing bonus and he gets cut. But yeah, kind of a bad situation. But and again, it kind of makes you wonder now. Joe Judge got decent reviews in his first year as a head coach, but also he's a Belichick guy. And so it's like, is this going to be kind of, you know, is he going to start to angle like a Matt Patricia where he starts, you know, getting upset with players and doing things that aren't player friendly and all that stuff? I mean, Bill Belichick does it. But again, he gets away with it because, again, he wins.
Hey, John, anything wrong with the Zach Wilson deal? I mean, Bob and I were talking about he missed 2 days, which isn't a huge deal, but should he have even missed 2 days? I mean, Bob asked the question yesterday. They're fairly slotted. I know that there's some, you know, different details and things like that, but I don't know. Is that just because the Jets are the Jets? I mean, it just seems like there's a second pick of the draft. You should have him signed on day one.
Yeah, I think it's the Jets being the Jets because, the argument is that they wanted to take part of his signing bonus and pay it in 2022. And it's like, and he's saying, no, I want it now. And so it's like, it's a signing bonus. I want the signing bonus within 15 days. And there was an argument about the offset. And, of course, the offset is if anything happens to him down the line in his contract, because the signing bonus is all guaranteed, he would keep that signing bonus. And then if they have a signing bonus and money coming from another team, then he gets that money. But this is the Jets being the Jets because they wanted to save money this year and pay it off in the future. So what did they do today? They came in and said, oh, we'll give you the signing bonus and we'll pay you in 15 days.
That's the Jets.
I bet you Jamal Adams would be able to confirm that that is the Jets being the
Jets. Oh, yeah, no doubt. And you notice there's no deal for Marcus May. I mean, he's on the franchise tag, so he's a free agent after the season.
John, the 425 asking, I personally think that this is the best Seahawks team we've ever had going into a season. Do you think there's a chance I'm right?
No, it's not as good as 213. I mean, 213 was the best team. I mean, because you can see it had, maybe the sixth best defense in NFL history. It had Russell Wilson as a rookie. I mean, it had Marshawn Lynch, had a decent offensive line. I mean, that was the best team. But I still think this is a good team. This is a team right now that I think is better. And again, what ends up happening is that, you make that Super Bowl run. So all of a sudden they break up the Legion of Boom. They have to let go some of the veteran players and all that stuff. And it usually takes 3 to 4 years to build up to that Super Bowl level. And of course, now talent wise, I think they're there. Now it's a matter of just getting the execution. And I think you can see from practice, I mean, the execution is excellent on offense. I mean, you can see with all the pass rushers, I mean, what did I total up? Is that on the defensive end, particularly with Alden Smith coming in and Kerry Hyder there? I mean, they have got a total of 150 sacks total for careers. I mean, Carlos Dunlap has a lot, and so Daryl Taylor has not played. So I think that you look at the pass rush, and that's good. And they can certainly be worried a little bit about the cornerback position. But tell me, in this division, who's really great at cornerback? I mean, it's like the Rams. I mean, they lose Troy Hill at cornerback, and certainly Williams, the guy that they picked up from Baltimore that they put the first round tender on, he's pretty good. But they still have a hole on the other side. Then you look at San Francisco with all their injuries and everything, but they got Jason Verrett. They've got Quan Williams, who's playing hurt, and so is that a great set? And Emmanuel Mosley. Decent player, but now he's on COVID-19. Then you look at Arizona. I mean, they let Patrick Peterson go. Robert Alford's there, but he's missed 2 seasons with injuries. And so all around the division, there's question marks at the cornerback position. So it's not just here in Seattle, but I think you can look at the division and say that.
Wait, did you mention Jalen Ramsey?
Oh, Jalen Ramsey's really good.
Yeah. Okay.
So can say that they're good at cornerback. Okay.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what. I think Troy Hill, that was a huge loss.
Yeah,
and really, when you look in the division of who lost, I mean, I know Arizona lost some corners, but if you look at who suffered the worst losses, and if you include Cam Akers, it's the Rams.
Yeah, four starters on defense. Cam Akers, Gerald Everett. They lose their starting center, Austin Bly.
Three coaches,
including the really good young defensive coordinator who's now in charge of the Chargers.
And so, Jared Goff.
That was
five out of six. Okay, five out of six.
That was addition by subtraction.
Yeah. John, the 425 is asking, is the buzz about the Seahawks' interest in Xavien Howard serious, and what would the team need to give up to get him?
I mean, they can't fit him under the cap. I mean, naturally, John Snyder is going to check on everything, so he's going to make a call. But how are you going to pay over $15 million for Howard, over $16 million for Jamal Adams, and of course, take care of Dwayne Brown? It would be too much. And of course, what you're talking about is they're not going to take any less than a first round pick for him. He had 10 interceptions last year, and they don't have a first round pick.
All right, John, NFL.com did breakout players for each team. Bob will like this one. The New Orleans Saints, Jameis Winston. And every time I see, I'm always surprised. Like, I would guess openly that he's 30, 31. Mm-hmm, he's 27.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's only 27 years old.
Listen, if he throws 20 interceptions, that's a 10 interception improvement from his last starting gig.
So
you could say, hey, look, he really turned things around. He only threw 20. That's 10 fewer.
Right.
Yeah, but of course, I mean, what you're looking at is still a team that lost Michael Thomas, their wide receiver, for 4 months because he had an ankle injury and ankle surgery, and Sean Payton's mad about that.
Yeah, mad about the timing of that,
yeah,
John,
it's like,
that
how come
he
you
waited.
Get the surgery earlier. It's like,
don't you feel like, and I was going to ask Dave about this later, but just I feel like we see that a lot in all sports. Guys that are dealing with an injury that, you know, the initial diagnosis is they're going to need surgery, but they often opt for physical therapy, let me try to work it out, and it seems like 9.5 times out of 10 they end up getting surgery. And I get it's easy for me to say, well, just go get cut open, but it feels like it almost always ends up like, well, yeah, that physical therapy didn't work, I got to get it worked on.
Yeah, no doubt. And of course, I mean, you do wonder, because it's not like they have great receivers there. They don't. I mean, Michael, it's kind of like what's up there in Green Bay before they've just picked up Randall Cobb. It's like it was Devontae Adams and a whole bunch of third and fourth receivers. Well, it's the same thing down in with the Saints. And, you know, they're down 11 starters at the beginning of the year. And then it could get worse because, you know, Marcus Lattimore, their Pro Bowl cornerback, I mean, he was arrested on a gun charge.
Hey, John. One of the things that happens with Super Bowl teams is, you know, they get picked apart a little bit. But the other thing is, and I heard this from an executive, I think it was with the Ravens, I can't remember his name, but he was talking about how everybody thinks that they're the reason why they won the Super Bowl, and that you have to manage all of the talent and everything because, you know, that's something that, you know, everybody wants a bigger cut of the pie. Like, they think they're the reason why. And I guess that's the opposite of that is happening in Tampa Bay. You know, that's been, you know, one of the things that Jason Light has done really well down there, obviously re-signing pretty much every starter. And so kind of interesting that that you hear that around the league, that's one of the pitfalls of winning a Super Bowl. But, man, did a really good job, and he's really a good GM.
Yeah, he really is. And, of course, I mean, one of the things that he told me for a Washington Post story is that I didn't get any hometown discounts. There was no hometown discounts, but everybody was fair in what they were asking for. You know, for example, here's Shaquille Barrett, you know, one of the best pass rushing linebackers in the league, and you know he could have asked for $20 million. He basically takes a longer term deal at 17. You know, when he was making 17 last year as a franchise player, and then you know some of the other guys. I mean, now Chris Godwin, of course, was on the franchise tag, so he didn't negotiate. But they were able to get decent deals with just about everybody without giving a hometown discount, to a point where, I mean, they were able to keep everybody. And again, he didn't know if he was going to be able to pull this off, but he did. I mean, Leonard Fournette took less money, and so and he's not even a starter, and still trying to determine if he's going to have a vaccine shot or not. But in the end, I think that you can see that and so much of it's because of Tom Brady. I think that, and maybe to a certain degree Bruce Arians, but I think what you can see that Brady, you know, he came in and took $25 million as opposed to $35 and said, hey, and he came back and redid his contract at $25, gave him more cap room so they can get these things done.
253 asking, John, how well do you see Derek Carr doing this year?
I think he's going to do okay. I just don't know if he has enough at wide receiver to help him out. You know, I know one of the things is that I still think they made a mistake last year. Now, Henry Ruggs is going to be a good receiver because he's so fast, and I know he's added 13 pounds this offseason, but Jerry Jeudy was the better pick. And because they picked, at 13, that's where they pick Ruggs. And, of course, at 15 is where Jerry Jeudy is. And the comparable on Jerry Jeudy is that he's like the next Marvin Harrison. And if you remember, Marvin Harrison just got into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So I'm not saying that that may happen with Jeudy, but I think right now, I mean, last year he had over 800 yards receiving, he had a 16.5-yard average, and did just great with like 52 catches, where it was like 24 catches for Ruggs, and sure, he averaged 17 yards a catch, but it was like only 24 catches. And he was there the entire season. So, I was even going through this with the history of the Raiders, and I think this is something that kind of keeps holding back Derek Carr. Look at all the receivers he's been through. I mean, Tyrell Williams, it was injured, and they paid him $11 million, and now he's gone. Antonio Brown, I mean, he's gone. Jordy Nelson was there. I mean, I listed about five or six guys that have been through there with John Gruden, and it's a constant twirl of who's going to be the next receiver. And that's not good because, again, you want to get used to the guys, and it's like if you're changing every year, that's not good for the quarterback.
John, we appreciate it. We'll talk again tomorrow.
No, we won't.
We won't? We're not talking tomorrow?
No.
All right.
No, because you only have a...
We're done at 4, the early Mariner game.
One-hour show.
You don't have to be a jerk about it.
I know you're up against the break, but it's like I'm not being a jerk about it. I'm just being realistic. Yeah, and of course, don't forget the sports. We'll have my show, John Clayton Show, from 8 to 11, taking your phone calls. Saturday morning. Yeah, so we'll talk on Monday.
Hey, John, have a good weekend.
I'll try.
We'll talk to you Monday, John.
Okay, thanks.
All right, see ya. Dave Wyman calling him a jerk.
I'm just teasing.
Yeah, we mess with John. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Well, you heard us talk about it. The Mariners just made a trade. We'll get into the details of that coming up with Wyman and Bob live from the VMAC on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wyman and Bob.
Live from Seahawks training camp
on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
The Mariners have made a deal, everybody. Trade deadline is tomorrow, but they have sent another reliever on his way, JT Chargois, who's did a nice job with the team. Thought he was a solid piece to that. What was a very good bullpen, and he was a big part of that. They send him along with minor leaguer Austin Shenton, who I don't recall hearing his name before, but he's a third baseman. They send him to the Tampa Bay Rays in exchange for their closer Diego Castillo, who is under team control through 2024. He's got 14 saves this season. Just a 36 and a third innings pitch, 2.72 ERA, which will disappoint John Clayton. 49 strikeouts and 10 walks.
We'll disappoint John Clayton.
Well, he said, if he's got an ERA of above 0.83, people are going to be upset.
Yeah.
So, not many people have an ERA of 0.8 anything.
Well, his point, though, was that people are going to be upset no matter what, right? Because people didn't like the trade, whatever. But, yeah, it's funny. I was looking at kind of interesting Chargois. I mean, his month of July was really good until yesterday. You know, he gave up 3 earned runs.
The bullpen as a whole was bad yesterday.
Yeah, so I mean, for him, 3 earned runs and a third of an inning. So, you know, but other than that, 0 the entire rest of the way. And if you look at Diego Castillo, his only blip is, in recent memory anyway, was playing the Mariners back in June 20th. He gave up 3 earned runs, and that's by far, because, I mean, all the rest of July, you know, 6 and a third inning and 0 earned runs. So, yeah, I mean, it looks like he's got some good stuff. Taylor, you said Brandon, son of Augustafson's tweeting some good things about him. So, yeah, maybe that won't make people as angry.
Yeah,
I like JT Chargois. I mean, I thought he was fun to watch.
What are you going to remember about him most?
Well, I remember him making the catch.
That's
off
it.
The pitcher's mound.
In his response.
What was it like?
Nobody does that.
Nobody does that. That's what he said.
That's before he cut his hair. He had the long flowing locks coming out of the back of his cap, and I thought that was hilarious. He's looking at his dugout, just like, Nobody does that.
Well, and the only reason was, right, because the shift was on.
Yeah.
Right? So he came off
the
mound.
Left side of the infield was vacant.
Right. So he was, I liked it a lot better after he cut his hair. That was going to be my second memory of him.
Him cutting his hair.
I thought he looked better after.
You don't like long-haired baseball players? There's a lot of them these days, Dave.
Well, some of them look okay. How about the guy that they got hired, that was the rookie that went out for the Angels for his first game.
Oh, with the big long beard and long hair?
He looked like Happy Gilmore's caddy.
Yeah. Yeah, he looked like he could have been a member of ZZ Top.
Yeah, I mean,
rest
he was
in peace,
just,
Dusty Hill, by the way.
It was brutal. What's that?
Their bass player died.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah, 72 years old, I believe.
I saw ZZ Top in concert a couple of times.
One of the few bands that have existed as long as they have with all original members.
Wow.
So, yeah, that trio's been together for quite some time. But, yeah, Dusty Hill passing away. In case you missed that, if you're a music fan, ZZ Top losing one of their members. But, yeah, it's on the cert. This is a deal I look at and go, yeah, I like Chargois. He was a nice piece, but this is a guy who can be your closer, and he's under team control through 2024. So, yeah, if you had concerns about the bullpen, see, to me, I looked at that trade and said, well, Graveman was your best arm. He was the best in terms of production. ERA below one. It's hard to beat that. But it seemed that him leaving wasn't so much, now what are they going to do with the bullpen? Now the bullpen's in trouble. It was about, look at how beloved he was by these guys and how upset they are. That was my concern. Not so much, how do you replace what he does? He was going to be a free agent at the end of the season. Will be a free agent. But does this ease, if you're somebody who looked at that trade and said, man, what are they doing? This is really, really killing your bullpen. How do you feel now? Do you feel like, okay, this move makes sense, and now I feel better about the Graveman deal? You can text in 710-710. For me, and listen, my first blush reaction to the Graveman deal was, I think it stinks. That was, unfiltered. That's what I think. I don't like it. I think Toro is, looking at his numbers, I felt like he's a duplicate of what you've got. People keep texting, oh, he's a highly rated prospect. Yeah, that's great, but let me see what he does on the field. And what he'd done on the field to this point was very reminiscent of what you have in Shed Long and Dylan Moore, a multi-positional player who comes in here hitting .211. He's hit some home runs. That's great. Can he be an everyday second baseman? He played one game at the professional level at second base before he did yesterday. So he's not a second baseman by trade. He's a third baseman. Maybe he's the guy that will take over if Seager leaves at the end of the year, if they trade Seager. There was a funny tweet from Seager's wife, by the way, saying something about, taking a chance, with the Major League Baseball deadline. I'm going to Costco, implying she's stocking up on big items and they could be on the move.
Okay.
I thought that was kind of a funny tweet from her. But yeah, so we'll see what happens with Toro. But it was more about the reaction of the players in that clubhouse, as opposed to he was certainly an arm, your best arm, in my opinion, in that bullpen. But bullpens we talk about each and every year, they're great one year. You could bring back, and the Mariners have done this, had the best bullpen in baseball a few years back, brought back essentially the same exact cast, and it was one of the worst.
Right.
Why it happens that way, there are just very few year in, year out, solid bullpen guys, closers. The Mariano Riveras, the John Wetlands, you name it. Those are the rarities. There's a reason Lee Smith's name. There's a reason Billy Wagner's name, all these guys, because they're the rarities. It's just, for whatever reason, you get years where guys hot for a year or two, and all of a sudden you can't get anybody out.
Yeah, it's very strange, that whole thing. Same thing with, like, closers.
Yeah.
You get one guy that it's like you capture lightning in a bottle and for one year. And it just seemed like with Graveman, getting back to that trade, he sure endeared himself to his teammates pretty quickly. I mean, he got here in 2020, and that's the shortened season, and I think he only threw in 11 games in that year in 2020, but 30 games this year, and it just seemed like everybody just loved him. And then that's the thing too, the other thing that hurts is that he this is a team that's young and emotional and they need leadership. And it sure seemed like, I mean, I would have thought he was 40 years old the way like everybody talks about him. And
that's because everybody else on this roster is 12
or they look 12.
Yeah. I mean, we played the sound of Kelnick talking about him yesterday. Kelnick, obviously a really young guy, and just talked about what he meant to him and his leadership and everything. So, you know, and Kelnick is more representative of that clubhouse as a whole, just the youth and inexperience. Right. So,
well, and it's interesting too, because he's you know, they talk about the pitchers and the positional players, and yet he's pretty much, it's not just the bullpen that he was a big, I don't know, he was kind of like the team mascot. Everybody just kind of came to him for any kind of advice or anything, and he's seen as this solid rock of a guy. That was heartbreaking to see him be interviewed.
Oh, I know, that was
he's
brutal.
Crying, but yeah, this looks good. I mean, I think this is a good move that you look at this guy's for real. Now, like you said, does he come here and do the same thing? We hope so, because it's looked good. And the only thing, like I said, the blip on the radar there is his outing against the Mariners.
Yeah, but they do that to everybody. They make everybody look pedestrian. All right, coming up, Marshawn Lynch continues to be the voice of reason. And you're going to hear why when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial. Every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
Well, we've talked a little bit about vaccination rate and how that was important. The Seahawks made a big point of that yesterday. 90 of their 91 players have been vaccinated. Well, Ron Rivera today, when he was asked, said he's frustrated that his team has such a low rate. The Washington football team, just over 50% of the players are vaccinated.
I'm beyond frustrated. And part of it is, and the reason I walked in with the mask on is, I'm immune deficient. Okay, so with this new variant, who knows? So when I'm in a group and the group's not vaccinated or there's mixture, I put the mask on. And I do that, for health reasons, because nobody really knows. And so I have to do that. And I just wish and I hope that our guys can understand that.
I get it. That's a guy that had a, brush with a deadly disease, and now he's, immune compromised. So I absolutely understand his concern. As far as the guys in the locker room, if you were somebody in, listen, I was waiting in line for that vaccine. I would have driven to parts unknown to get it when it was first coming out. So I'm not anti by any stretch. But if you're somebody that got it reluctantly, just said, fine, I'll do it. I don't want to, but I will, in order to play and all of that. But then the guy in the locker next to you is like, help yourself. I'm not doing it. Would that bother you? If you're like, listen, man, I didn't really want to do it either, but this is about the whole rather than the individual here. This is about our team and our coach and everything. Well, I wonder if that would create any level of animosity on some level.
Yeah, we're in uncharted territory because there's never been, a time where there's been a factor as to, like, what you do. There's what you do to your own body. I mean, like, there's not right. even an amendment or a rule for that, because it's just been naturally, of course, you only take medicine. And if you want to or you need it, it's your choice. But yet, does that indeed, somehow affect somebody else? And then, you kind of weigh that. It's a very complicated situation. And I keep saying, and then the NFL, they were saying that too. Hey, we celebrate people's rights to not take it. But I don't know, the other side of it is you certainly are going to be, you're going to be punished if you don't. So, how are you looking that? How are you perceiving that? Because, and again, I feel I could not imagine judging anybody either way. If you're Ron Rivera, absolutely. I have a family member had cancer. Absolutely. You would go and do that. So you'd be the first one in line. So, I totally
do you look
understand
at the coach's
that.
Family?
Huh?
Do you look at the coach's family and say, I'm somebody that doesn't want to do that. And if he weren't dealing with what he's dealing with, I probably wouldn't. But since he is my guy, I'm going to do
he
that.
As family, you're doing it for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just think everybody can only do what's best for themselves, and that's, and do you want to take, and I don't know the whether you want to call it a risk or whatever. You think you already had it and beat it, and your own immune system is already, beaten that, then, you know, I can understand that perspective. It's just, it's very complicated. I really look forward to the point when we don't have to, you know, talk about this here, because it's gotten to be very divisive in this country as far as whether you do or don't.
Sweeping the dial.
Marshawn Lynch was on First Take yesterday, and he was asked who won the power struggle between Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay front office, and of course, he dropped some knowledge on everyone.
Man, if they don't win a Super Bowl, then they both lost.
If Aaron doesn't win a Super Bowl, then they both lost.
I said if they don't win a Super Bowl, then they both lost.
Right. Yeah, I guess the thing I would say there is, why would you say that for the Packers, though? Because they should have looked ahead to the future if they don't get a ring with him this year?
No, I'm saying that because the whole point of playing a game is to win a Super Bowl.
He's right. Every year, I mean, all 32 teams think that they're going to go to the Super Bowl and want to go to the Super Bowl. It's your ultimate goal. It's the only reason you play. Did I absolutely 100% believe that some of the teams that I was on were going to go to the Super Bowl? Yes. Yes. Damn it. I'm telling you.
I like that you qualified it with some of the teams that you're on.
Every year.
Every year?
You even 1992.
So you thought every preseason we're going to the Super Bowl.
Why not us? What do you think? We're in here to lose? You think I've gone through all these practices and grinding it out?
There's a sense of realism where you look down the league and you're going, well, but that team over there, whoever was dominant at the time, the Buffalo Bills or whoever, you're going, I don't know if they were going to be able to surpass them.
I just never thought anything other than that. I always thought we're just as good as them. We got used to get into the whole human nature thing, and there's letdowns. Would you look at a team and go, oh, we can beat them pretty easily. I'm going to take it easy this week. It's outrageous.
Sweeping the dial.
Brian Gutekunst, or Goody, as you guys have taken to calling him, kind of admitted in his press conference. So Aaron Rodgers had a revealing press conference. Brian Gutekunst said, basically, we only brought Randall Cobb in to make Rodgers happy.
I think that's a big part of it. I think it's a big, you know, obviously without Aaron, I don't think we would probably be pursuing that. Randall's still a really good player. And seeing him last night just kind of reminded me, you know, what an impact he'll have in our locker room for our football team. But, you know, this was a very important thing for Aaron, and that's why we did it.
That's, boy, they're all about transparency there, aren't they? I mean, there's no generalities there. Yeah, if not for Aaron, we probably wouldn't have looked at this. How do you feel if you're Cobb? You're like, oh, you guys didn't really want me. Aaron wanted me. You guys had no interest.
Yeah. Well, it's
a weird situation, man.
It really is. And then you look, today I was watching a highlight reel of, first of all, Aaron Rodgers. And personally, do I like him? Eh, he's not my favorite, okay? But I love watching him throw a ball.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really fun watching how he moves around. But then looking at Davante Adams and some of the ridiculous throws and catches there, and it's hard to tell, like, is that a really, really amazing catch or is that an amazing throw? And a lot of times it was an amazing catch. And Davante Adams, you know, I mean, if you're looking at, aren't you going to him going, come on, man, let's make a run at this. Let's make this like a 2-3 year deal. Because you look at Aaron Rodgers, and like he said the other day, he's like, you know, I proved to them that I can still compete at my age. I mean, look, I don't.
MVP.
He was, he's the MVP. He only threw five interceptions. So, and he was 72% completion. I mean, he's just gotten better. And that's the one thing, you know, you look at Brady. And, you know, did he have monstrous numbers? No, but he's still winning. He's still finding a way to get it done. And, you know, I mean, look, Aaron Rodgers to me looks like a guy. How old is he, 41?
Aaron? No, he's 38. 30,
he's only 38.
37, yeah, I mean, 38?
I think he's got another 5 years to me. That's what it looks like to me. So, yeah, I mean, if you're Davante Adams, you know, if he's talking about leaving, you're not happy about that. But, it just, again, you know, that affects everybody around him. So, what is he? You're right. He's almost 38 coming up here. So, You look at Brady at, 42? And you think, I can easily play another 4 years. That's what it looks like to me.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy who's been durable. He doesn't take a lot of hits. He gets rid of the ball. His arm strength certainly doesn't look like it's dissipated any. So, yeah.
Started out at Butte Junior College.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the, first 2-3 years of his career, he wasn't playing. He was behind Favre. So, you know, there was no wear and tear there either. So, yeah, he should be able to play for a while, you would certainly think. All right, our Seahawks training camp coverage is presented by Precor Home Fitness. Coming up,
Paul Moyer will join us next, as he does every week here with Wyman and Bob, live from the VMAC on 710 ESPN Seattle.